Vanity and pride are different things, though the words are often used synonymously. A person may be proud without being vain. Pride relates more to our opinion of ourselves, vanity to what we would have others think of us. Jane Austen.
Bending, Not Breaking. The live action episodes. Episode 6. Masks. And we're back with another episode.
Another episode.
And just real crisp enunciation.
Masks.
Masks. Had to be plural.
Yeah, right? Yeah, we're talking about masks.
Masks.
And it's the blue spirit in the flesh.
Yeah.
For real. The actual one.
It was.
Yeah. And then, you know, all the things, the Yuuzhan Archers. We got Admiral Zhao.
We did.
We got all the things.
Tween right? Law is going to be a real question mark.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see what we feel
Stay
about it.
Stay tuned.
Who knows? Later coming, what did we feel about it?
Yeah.
I'm going to try to be more middle of the road
leading
up to that point this time.
We got pride we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Not vanity, but pride.
Reasonable self-esteem or confidence and satisfaction in oneself.
Interesting qualifier.
Oxford defines it as the quality of having an excessively high opinion of oneself.
Ooh.
Or one's own importance.
Interesting.
Which Jane Austen would say, Oxford, you dum-dums, that's not what it is.
Yeah. Pride, opinion of ourselves, vanity, others think of ourselves. So, yeah, that's according to Jane Austen, right? You know, and then there's the you know, really common quote around pride cometh before the fall, right? So if you feel super proud, you're going to fall harder when you mess up, kind of a deal.
I'm 27, I have no money and no prospects, and I'm terrified.
I don't remember where that's from.
Pride and Prejudice, bud.
Oh, what a great, great piece of media.
I watched the movie recently.
Yeah, which one?
Keira Knightley.
Oh, I love that adaptation.
It was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll appreciate more Jane Austen now. As I aged.
Yeah. Ooh, fair. Because you used to think it was boring.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Were you just too proud to enjoy it?
I don't know. I remember a phrase I used to throw around in my younger years.
Or just too prejudiced.
Was fair. Unpacking that every day. is that Jane Austen was the Stephanie Meyer of her time.
You have said that.
Yeah.
A few times.
Which was meant to be a negative comment.
You know how so many people have like doctorates in like Jane Austen?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know what I don't have?
A doctorate in Jane Austen.
A doctorate.
Yeah. Yeah, period.
So... You know what?
No PhD.
I admit that I am probably wrong.
Yeah. Fair.
I feel like I read Emma in Brit Lit, like in college.
I read Jane Eyre in Brit Lit.
Mm-mm. And I've read Pride and Prejudice. And I've seen Pride and Prejudice in Zombies.
I haven't seen that one.
It was not good.
Yeah, I bet not.
But I thought it could be fun because that was like a whole shtick for a little bit. Was like, what if we add zombies to this like
to everything.
Classic literature novel?
Turns out, interesting shtick didn't last.
Yeah, but I am not proud enough to say that maybe I'm wrong about Jane Austen. Maybe I'm, preferring it, and I think I misquoted it anyway. So
yeah, I mean, and this is our announcement that Bending Not Breaking is transitioning to Jane Austen specifically. And Sunshine is going to be the main host for
that
series.
What a fun turn that could be. You know who also doesn't have a doctorate but seems incredibly, thinks incredibly high of themselves?
Jane Austen?
No. Commander Zhao.
Oh! Admiral Zhao, you mean?
Not yet. Not till the recap's over.
Oh, okay. Speaking of recap.
Yeah.
Let's talk about masks. So you have 30 seconds on the clock. And I'm going to time you. Are you ready?
Yeah.
On your mark, get set, Go.
Zuko's first war council meeting, and Zhao is on Zuko's ship, and then Zhao is now an admiral. See, that's where it happens. Iroh talks to a crew about Zuko and his sacrifices, and you know nothing, Jon Snow. Aang is at a fire temple and gets a little help, and then meets Roku. We learn of the Mother of Faces, and Aang hears that friends are a liability. June catches Aang.
10 seconds.
And then Agni Kai flashback, and then Blue Spirit frees Aang, and then, you know, can we be friends? And Zuko says, no! And then Iroh cares about Zuko.
Yeah. Yeah. Iroh cares about
and then
Zuko.
And then a fight broke out.
All right. Well, if you didn't watch it, now you are a masterfully informed...
You are informed.
...person. And so welcome. Welcome to this episode of Bending on Breaking, where we talk about pride and masks. What is a moment of pride in masks that you noticed?
Yeah, I mean, let's talk Zhao. First of all, such a weird cadence for someone that is supposed to be so intimidating.
Yeah.
I think there is something that I should tell you, and it's that we will celebrate
the fire.
And I was like,
nation.
Yeah, the man who does very little. Thinks very highly of himself. And so that's, yeah.
Well, I mean, plays right into Azula / Ozai's, like, hands, right? Like, does exactly what
they're
want
hoping
him to
he
do,
does,
right?
Yeah. And I think it's like, there's also, I think of people, there are times when a good coach, and so, like, I need to set this barrier. A sports coach,
yep,
or a mentor is very different than someone who is leading
a military commander,
a military colonization,
imperialist genocide
sect, right? Yeah. So let me recognize that those are very two different things. But there's also something to be said for like a coach who can take someone and helps them be successful, and then someone who is successful despite their coach. A lot of times, the archers are successful despite their coach.
Ooh, interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they are highly qualified, and they were gifted to you. If anything, they are the reason that, you were able to catch the Avatar and take them away from, stealing them away from, you know, Zuko and Iroh. It had nothing to do with your military prowess.
Yeah.
So,
well, and it's
pump
also,
the brakes, and you're a bad public speaker, so.
To me, this really speaks to the difference between Jane Austen's pride and vanity, like,
It is vanity.
According to her, right? Yeah. Like, this is pure, like, they think so highly of me, therefore I am incredible. And I celebrate everything.
And, like, but how true is that? And so, you know, I think it is probably fair to say that most of us who have ever had imposter syndrome have the feeling that we are showing up to spaces and don't want to look like Admiral Zhao.
Yeah.
And that we are looking like Admiral Zhao every single day. Yeah. And then what a fear that is. And so part of the question then becomes like, what if you are actually good?
Admiral Zhao?
What if you are actually, good? Okay. Good at what you're doing?
Yeah.
But we feel, because of this aversion to pride and vanity,
mm-hmm.
we feel like we're showing up as an imposter. We don't know what we're doing. We're not credible. When sometimes, you are.
Yeah.
Sometimes you are showing up well.
And you would show up better if you believed you did.
And you would show up better if you believed you did.
Right. Well, and I think often what people talk about is like the antidote to pride is humility. And again, humility is right-sized understanding of yourself, where I know that I'm good at this and I'm going to act accordingly.
Yep.
Or I know that this is not my strength.
And I'm going to act accordingly.
And what we see is Zhao saying,
I have no awareness
I am everything.
Of my ability.
I think pride is an outsized, this is again my definition, an outsized understanding of your ability. But I don't think that's all pride is, because I think I can be proud of myself, and that's very right-sized. But again, it's this like conversation when vanity comes into play of I am outsized or not right-sized because I believe other people's opinion of me is making me better than other people's. Like, so it's an interesting mm-hmm. dynamic. I don't know if I'm putting my finger on it, but it's an interesting play on what is it actually. And I still don't know. Even after years of, we've talked about this before, you know, I don't know what it is.
I mentioned the last episode that I was recently leading a training, and part of that conversation was like, what do you respect in the people who've mentored and coached you and led you in the past?
Yeah.
And a lot of the answers centered around confidence, knowledge, you know, willing to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But confidence and knowledge was part of it. Like, I want the person who's leading me to be confident in their answers and to know what they're talking about and help guide me. And again, there are so many times where I think out of this sense of not wanting to show up that way, we lean towards.
No, I don't know.
I don't know. Let's find it together, which is a really good answer sometimes.
But if you know,
it's sometimes it's just better to be like, yeah, I think you should do this. Right? There's ways to show up with your skill set. And I think that requires you to have awareness
of what you bring
to the table and to be okay with being yourself. There's also a difference between showing up confidently and showing up in a way that is minimizing the feelings of everybody else in that space because of how confident you are.
I love how you just pointed your finger right at Zhao again. So as soon as he gets promoted to Admiral, he comes in and is like, oh, by the way, I'm Admiral now, and you have to do everything I say. By the way,
because I've got this title.
But yeah, by the way, everything you've ever done is wrong, and I hate you. It's like all of those little jabs he throws at Zuko. And by the way, your crew, mine. And you, dumb. And you, I hate you. And like, it's like very much how he shows up in the original too, frankly. But like, it's this, I've been promoted, and now I'm better than you attitude.
Which is a real thing.
To be fair, because Zuko has been treating him poorly all this time. And, you know, now that he has the upper hand, he really shows his cards and is like, listen, I think I've got you in checkmate, and I don't care what you know. Classic villain move, right? Of
as we learned in Fast and the Furious, he hit the NOS too soon.
Yeah. Okay. Which one was that? 10, 11?
That was
9.
Fast and the Furious, the very 7, first one.
Tokyo Drift.
He hits the NOS too soon. Mm. Paul Walker hits it in the very first race.
Rest in peace.
Too soon. And Vin Diesel wins.
Mm.
And he says, I almost had you. And Vin Diesel says, you didn't almost have me. You didn't even have your car. And then he says, it doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile. Winning's winning.
Wow.
And then bold. In the second movie, Paul Walker has to go undercover in Miami.
Mm.
And Vin Diesel's not in that movie.
Oh. I thought The Rock was in it.
He gets there.
Okay.
Later.
Turns out, Bending Not Breaking is changing into a Fast and the Furious.
A Jane Austen Fast and the Furious dual show.
Yeah.
Every episode, we'll take one Jane Austen book and one Fast and the Furious movie, and we'll talk about a common lens that goes between the two of them.
Other moments of pride in this episode of
Pride
Masks.
And Prejudice and Furious.
Furious Pride and Prejudice.
Furious Pride.
Yeah.
Fast Pride and Furious
Fast and the Prejudice. Oh, no. Okay.
Y'all are witnessing what is going to be one of the greatest podcasts that we could ever create.
I think that would be hilarious. Marcus in on this?
We can get
one of our mutual friends.
We can get a few people in on this.
Yeah. I have another Zhao moment.
Sure.
You know, Zhao's like the king of the king here, king of pride here.
I love some Zhao slander.
Well, I'm thinking about like he's literally having this scribe follow behind him this whole time and is like,
Don't write that down,
but write this down this way. And no, I need you to do it. It's just like this, you know, very like manufactured response to the Fire Lord about how he's the greatest ever. And
just putting a filter on it.
And then he loses it. And it's just one of those things where it's like, it serves you, like, it creates the response in me, which it did in the original too, but it creates the response in me of like, you deserve that. Like, and what is that urge to believe that when people are too proud, that they deserve their comeuppance? Does that make sense as a question? Like,
the question is, do people deserve comeuppance when they're too prideful?
Well, it's not necessarily that, but like, why do I feel vindicated that Zhao gets his comeuppance after being too proud?
Because we all love to see the prideful fall, I think.
Is that a thing? Is that something we love to see?
I think, yeah, if we feel like people are inherently not in a space where they're supposed to be, or not treating a space well,
don't deserve it.
They don't deserve it, then we like to see them fall from that. I think there's also, whether good or bad, and probably mostly leans towards the negative side, there is something about human nature, I think, that makes us feel good. We feel better about ourselves when we see other people fail. And I don't think that's a good thing. And I don't think that's true of everybody, but no. I think everyone can point to a moment where maybe they felt better.
Yeah.
Watching the failure of someone else.
I mean, it reminds me of Game of Thrones, right? Like, you are you are expected to hate some of those characters. Like, yeah. Joffrey, right, is a classic, like, you loved to hate this character. I loathed this character. And then, like, when it finally happened where he, spoiler alert, got, there was, like, I celebrated. I was like, finally!
Yeah!
Yeah!
And I wonder if that's the play to, you know, you hear about a beloved celebrity or politician who does something wrong and has their fall for grace, and you're like, no! But maybe that was deserved, but bummer. Yeah. And then when you see people you don't like who fall, and you're like, good.
Ha-ha!
Because they're a trash person.
Like, it's an element
right?
of Schadenfreude, you know? Like, pleasure in another's pain.
And I don't know.
And it's perceived pride, right?
I think if we feel like someone is not in a position or treating it with respect or doesn't deserve to be there, that's where it feels vindicated when they fail.
Yeah.
Or if you feel like they're causing harm to others, you want to see justice. Like, you want to see that justice being served, and it feels like some form of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not atonement, but, it feels like some form of, that justice that you're trying to get a sense of. And so I think we hope to see that with Zhao.
Yeah.
Like, I better see a big CGI koi fish eat him on top of a bridge. And we'll find him in the Lost Souls later. Fog of Lost Souls. Who knows? But I think that's what we celebrate. I think is where that looks at. And I don't know how
it's
personal identification. I can't speak for everybody, but
yeah. Yeah. But I do think that is a common response to characters like this. And it's interesting that it causes that response in us, because it means that our perception of someone's outsized pride going to color how we perceive them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to change how we react to their successes and their failures. And I think that's worth knowing about ourselves. So I thought that was a moment. All right. What's a non-Zhao moment? Or unless you have a different Zhao moment. We can keep talking about Zhao. I mean, Zhao.
Zhao. No. I think there's a moment where Aang says, I'm the Avatar. And expects to be received a specific way.
To the sages, right? Yeah.
And is not received that way.
Yeah.
And I don't, it's interesting because that doesn't come off the same way that Zhao's pride does. But it is pride to sit there and say, I hold this title. I am this thing.
I
expect this relationship because of the way that I'm showing up to that space. And what it means when someone says, no, I don't want you here. Yeah. Like, I don't like you.
I know who you are. I'm going to kill you instead.
I'm going to get you. And so I think there's, that's a level of checked privilege, I think, in some ways, right? Aang expects to walk into the space that he feels is his and is being told he's not. Yeah. Again, I don't like paralleling that with an imperialistic Fire Nation.
Well, it's also...
But that's a thing, right? Like, that's a real thing to find out that a space isn't yours that you think should be or is.
Well, that's so interesting.
And having to rumble with that.
Yeah, I was thinking about it from a different perspective. So it sounds like you're kind of going into it, seeing Aang moving forward because he's the Avatar, and that's what's going to move him through. And to me, what I read it was, is that he has a perception of these fire sages and that they will treat him a certain way because of, right?
And that's so, probably a better, I think that's probably a better metaphor like for this situation.
Like it's an externalized locus of his assessment rather than an assessment of his status. It's an assessment of their reverence for the status.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Is it difference? Like, it feels like he misjudges them more than he misjudges his own title. That, and I think both are interesting because, like, I think both have some truth to them.
It's like being told that cops will protect you.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
going to go up to a group of cops
yep.
at a rally and yep. then realizing, like, oh, they're protecting Capitol, not you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's yikes. But also true. But, you know, so... In a way, it's this element of pride, like, for the sages, too. Oh, like, this is what these sages have been doing for years. This is what they've kind of been designed to do. And then to see that, like, that's not what the sages are doing is an interesting thing to kind of, like, realize that the pride of station can change drastically under certain conditions.
One of the things I think pops up in this is just kind of the idea of language and how language can be shifted. And I think pride is one of those things. It's a tougher thing to define because there's many modern uses and definitions.
The semantic field is large.
Because jumping to Zuko in the war room, Zuko stood up for what was right. He did not act outside of his knowledge or credibility.
Agreed.
He was invited into that space and told you have a seat at the table.
Yep.
And then he voiced his opinion on that. And then was told you are too proud. You stepped out of line. How dare you question other people? And that idea of no, you're the too prideful one in this moment.
Yeah.
Not the guy who got super defensive.
Eight pot, meat kettle. Yeah.
Yeah. Not the one who got super defensive about being told that their military plans was like, you know, probably an unkind thing to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ozai gets defensive, gets upset. His pride starts to show. But it's just the immediate, like, you're being, like, you are stepping out of line. How dare you show that type of pride, like, in this space?
Well, also.
And it's like, pump the brakes.
Well, it's like, what is the purpose of this, too? Because by doing this to Zuko, what you're telling everyone in the room is that if you disagree, then you're with someone of higher rank than you, then you're wrong and you deserve punishment.
Right.
And so that does not foster a like it to me. What that says is that pride can be a hindrance to a holistic approach to doing the best good possible, right? Because if people are only contributing when they feel safe from not dying,
yep.
it's going to change how people contribute, right? And that's true on a minor scale too. If it's not even death on the line and it's just your personal safety, emotional, physical, or otherwise, you're going to contribute less if that's going to bring harm to you or others.
Absolutely.
And so this doesn't – I don't understand – it seems like a bad choice leadership wise. You know, it seems like a bad choice.
Yeah, Ozai is not an example of this. I mean, he's got Zuko beating the Agni Kai. Zuko's laying down on the ground.
Yeah, where's the pride in being
and I've a got 13-year-old? I've got to teach you a lesson, and this is the only way. And it's a matter of pride for yeah. Ozai.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder how frequently that happens when we're in spaces where we're teaching kids, when we're teaching, when we're a coach or a mentor. That becomes not about the lesson. It becomes about the way that you view me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that happens often in classrooms, in spaces where we're sports coaches. When a teacher says something or a coach, and this is not a condemnation of the profession, is a condemnation of, I think, poor skills
yep.
for those who are using these skills.
Yeah.
But when it comes to a point of, I said it, so it's the right thing, and how dare you argue with me, go run laps. Yep. Or like, I said it so it's the right thing, how dare you question me in a classroom that's supposed to be about teaching critical thinking skills and getting to the right answers, not just the answer that is being stated.
My answer, yeah.
And the way that we treat people. A great example, because I said so, right? Like,
oh yeah,
is such a common answer to folks. Why do I have to do this way? Because I said so. Well, that's not a good enough answer. Like, yeah. That's not, the intent isn't there, and some people need to see the intent to accomplish a task. And so I see a lot of that in, there's a lot of pride, and I hold this position of authority, and probably for good reason a lot of those times. Well, and that alone requires just a non-questioning ethic.
It reminds me of this conversation we had last episode around this, the seeking mentality of, what are you seeking, and do you actually know what you're seeking, or are you seeking something that's a means to an end? So, right? Like, if I say, hey, I need you to do this, and you say, why do I need to do this? Because you truly don't understand. And I say, because I said so, you might do it wrong because you don't know my ultimate goal.
Right?
You might do it in a way that doesn't actually do what I'm trying to get you to do. Like, if I need you to get this report done. Why? Well, then you're going to do the wrong report. You're going to do a report that is X, Y, or Z. But no, I need it for because of this. You might be like, oh, well, I can get you those numbers just by sending you an email. It is easier to communicate than it is to say I said so.
There, real story of child,
story time.
Child sunshine. At one point, I had a dog when I was a kid. Were you taking care of the
Teletubbies baby in the sun baby?
No, I was probably 6 or 7 or 8.
So you were just a Teletubby. Okay,
yeah, just a Teletubby. My dad said, "Go empty the dog's water." And I said, "Why?" And he goes, "Because you need to empty the water." I said, "Okay." So I just took the water bowl and I dumped it out on the floor. And then I put the water back down, and he was furious. And I'm sitting there going,
I did exactly what you told me to do. Yeah.
Like, what are we talking about? I was definitely like 5 or 6 when this happened. Couldn't reach a sink, right? Like, I just,
so
like,
you were not being a smart ass.
He said, dump the water out. I was like, okay. I dumped it out. He's like all over his pants and shoes, and he's livid. And I'm just like, verbatim.
Yeah.
I'm here as a kid being like, I've got receipts.
Yeah.
This is what you said.
Yeah.
I did what you said. You being mad about this is, that's on you, bro.
Yeah.
Like, so, but it goes to saying, like,
that's exactly what we're talking about.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And so, and again, that comes from this place of, I am in this position for a reason. My dad's a great man. My dad would never do anything wrong. Like, dude burned your face.
Yeah.
You are a victim.
Yeah.
Need you to see it.
Yeah.
But all of this is coming from a place of pride for Ozai, not a place of longevity for the Fire Nation, not a place for longevity of the world that they're in. It is strictly a vanity project.
Ooh, yeah.
So
that sounds right. I agree. Can we talk about Roku for a hot second? Avatar,
yeah.
Roku.
Avatar, Roku.
I found it really, I was,
you're going to say off-putting.
I was off, yeah, off-putting. Like, it was a little odd for me, right? Where the urgency of the moment and the levity, like, this was a moment where they tried to bring in levity, where I was like, wait.
There's a wrong place to bring in levity. What are we doing?
Like, and so, and I think that I like, honestly, the contrast between Kiyoshi and Roku, and that kind of being like, no, we're totally different people. Like, and so that I liked, but I found it like, there's this moment where there's this jovial, like, I'm going to mess with you kind of a deal, which is fine. But like right now in this moment, and then Aang is like, no, you don't understand. And then Roku's like, no, you don't understand. And they're talking about, like, this feud with Ko, and Aang's like, no, you don't understand, my friends. And he's like, no, you don't understand, Ko's bad. And I'm like, or hear me out. Like, y'all could listen to each other and, like, hear out when people say you don't understand.
I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't have stolen the totem, Roku.
Yeah, well, and just also have some humility. Like, I feel like the response, no, you don't understand, is, like, I'm feeling more compelled after watching that scene to actually be like, okay, what don't I understand? Like, let me really hear what you mean, because I am clearly not communicating to you that you're being heard. And so I want you to feel heard. And even if I think you're wrong, I need to know why you don't think I understand so that I can respond accordingly and help you see that, one, oh, I see what you're trying to tell me now. And here's why I think that with this information you've just given me, why I still think this is going to be problematic. And I think that it's a bad conversation tactic. And I think it stems from pride. And of this, no, you don't understand response, right?
Yeah.
So that's my thought on that. I'm curious if you agree, if that feels wonky or
what? Yeah, I think – I mean, so often I think when you feel like you have the knowledge that someone else doesn't have, you feel like you have authority in that space. And it's frustrating.
That's an interesting word choice. I think you're right.
It's frustrating when you feel like people aren't respecting or hearing that authority.
Respect
in that
my
space.
Authority.
Or the expertise. Like, I've got the expertise in that. Because I think we've all been in situations where, like, I absolutely know the most about this thing right here in this room, and and people aren't listening.
Yep.
And that's a very real thing.
Yep.
And then sometimes I think that translates to other spaces where it's like, that may not be true in this space.
Yeah, that's so true.
But also, sometimes you have to communicate the why. If that, like, don't let pride get in the way of you taking time to communicate the why. Just because you have the contextual understanding doesn't mean that others do, and don't let your pride be a reason that you don't share that.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. And so, yeah, Roku was an interesting, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm saving things for Twin Law.
Sure.
The Blue Spirit.
So, I'm interested in this, too. Like, is there pride in skills that, like, enable him not just to let things be? Or is it because his pride is at stake that he chooses to do this? Because the way it was framed in this one is like, oh, this place is, kind of like the Boiling Rock. You can't break people out. It's impenetrable. It's this.
Yeah.
And so, is it pride that motivates him to do it anyway? Or is it because his pride is at stake? Like, does that make sense? Is it because he wants to find the pride of doing this, or because he's worried that he will lose, like, his honor? Does it make, like, it's
maybe
kind
it's
of
a maybe it's a little both.
Both, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. You think about the mask and the intent behind wearing it.
Masks.
The one mask this time.
Yeah.
Just the Blue Spirit one. There's probably two reasons you can say that Zuko wears it. One's probably more probable. The other one, I like the idea of.
Improbably probable.
Improbably probable. Safety is the first reason.
Yeah.
Protecting his identity.
Well, and Iroh, again, covers it. It's in the Fire Nation. He is going directly against Ozai's orders.
Correct.
By going to the Fire Nation.
Yep. The other one that I kind of like more, that I don't think is just doesn't make as much sense, but is my own kind of like personal headcanon, is that sometimes you can recognize how good you are at something and you don't need the validation for it. And so, like, I'm putting on this mask because it could be anybody, and I'm not claiming it so it could be anybody, but I know that I have the skill set to go in there and do these things.
And I don't need to be recognized.
And I don't need
it.
To be recognized for it.
Yeah.
Not to say that recognition is bad. It's absolutely not. A lot of people need, and I myself also need recognition at times. But there's also something to be said about, like, doing a good job on something and not – and you have pride in yourself to the point to where you're able to kind of recognize what you've done and don't need the validation of others in that moment.
Well, there's an interesting thing that happens, too, where we see this in the original, where – originally, the Blue Spirit is, like, very skilled with broadswords. And then Zhao comes along and says, ah, broadswords, Zuko, I didn't realize. and like makes a connection. And Zuko's like, I don't need you. I don't need the recognition here. Yep. In fact, that recognition is actively what I don't want to happen.
Right.
Right. And so there's an element of like actively hiding or not searching or seeking that external validation in the form of pride that can be protective, right? That I need to hide this part of myself, even though I know I'm good at it, right? In order to continue to be the way that I want to be.
When there's times that singular validation can take away from the group need for that validation.
Yeah. Now this was a group success.
This is a group success. Maybe I did 90% of it.
Yeah.
But the group did it.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to recognize in this moment. So,
yeah.
You know, I think we get this really beautiful moment of Iroh sharing about why the crew is on the boat.
I really liked this choice.
And there's probably a reason Zuko didn't want them to know that early on. Whether he felt like a failure, whether it felt like a ship of failures getting sent off.
Yeah.
Whether it was you know, such a burden at the time, he just didn't want the crew to look at him differently. And Iroh sits there and says, like, no, this is... It's time you know. And then Zuko gets back to the boat, and he has earned this recognition.
Yeah.
He has earned this kind of commitment and loyalty from others and trust from them because of this thing that he did. Which is a really beautiful moment that I really loved.
Well, and it's so... I think that's what makes Zuko very compelling in this version, is that Zuko is actively trying to be recognized by his father, and in that process is actively trying to avoid recognition from anyone else. Right?
Well, and it gets to this point where here's this moment where he could have a real connection with an ally, a resource of him and Aang. And the moment Aang says, your father's not a bad guy is not a good guy, and you know it.
Yeah.
And then it's like pride.
Snap.
Yeah. Boom. This pride jumps in, and I've got my dad's a great man.
Well, I mean, the problem with that is, like, that's so true of people, though, is that when your whole identity is based on one thing and someone tries to counter that identity, it means you –
They're countering you.
Exactly. It feels like a personal attack, and that's exactly what we see, and I think that's played out so well in this. Is, like, again, Zuko is a beacon of viewing pleasure in this.
Zuko, I think, is the most engaging. He's one of the best performers in the show. He's got some of the best writing and arc is happening with Zuko.
Agreed.
It is almost like a Zuko show that Aang and the crew happen to be in.
Like supporting actors.
And that, the Zuko content is good content.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, let me ask you this. The purpose of Iroh kind of stepping in and telling this story, is it to defend Zuko's honor? Or his, like, is it to, like, boost his pride or protect his pride or boost the pride of the crew? Like, there's an element of he's doing this for a reason, and it feels like it's to build solidarity around Zuko. But, like, I'm curious if pride is anywhere in this.
So I think so, because I think, you know, there's this question. He's proud of Zuko,
yeah,
right?
Maybe that's it.
And so I think that's getting somewhat questioned. Why go to bed? Why are you worried about this? Like, why are you proud of this kid? This kid sucks. Yeah. Like, that's what's getting presented in front of him. And so at a certain point, he is just justifying why he is justified in feeling proud in Zuko.
Yeah.
And he's just sharing that with the others. And I think that we get to a certain point where he is actually sharing the why behind everything that's happening in this moment.
Yeah. I mean, that's,
Everything that we were talking about earlier, it's not because I said so. You shouldn't be proud of Zuko because I said so. It's you should be proud of Zuko because this is the sacrifice he made
for you. Yeah.
And that's a really cool thing.
And I tried not to
when it actually
tell
happens.
You this.
Yeah.
I tried to not tell you because he, out of his wish that of following his lead, tried to not tell you, but it seems like it is.
But now I'm being questioned as to why I feel this way, and here's my justification around it. But he doesn't do that in a way that's like, y'all are
wrong.
Y'all are terrible and wrong.
Yeah.
It does come off of like you don't know what sacrifice is.
Yeah. 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 Well, when he talks about like, you know, Lieutenant G is, you know, you want to talk about loyalty? We have never seen a shred of loyalty from Zuko. And it's one of those things where what that shows is that, you know, the sharing of information and protecting your, you know, not protecting your self-image and is can be harmful, right? Doing things not wanting the recognition can be a harmful thing that doesn't communicate care. It doesn't communicate or build solidarity. And at some point, you need to share and show the motivations and the why and the good you've done in order to really holistically build relationship that is reciprocal, mm-hmm. right? And so, and we see that. We see how one-sided it feels until this is shared.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it changes perspective.
Yeah. This seems like a good spot to maybe take a little break, unless you have something you want to add.
I am interested in a break.
All right.
We'll let us right back. Let us break.
Let us leave.
Break.
Talking Twi'an Law. What'd you like? What'd you didn't like? What pushed you away? What pulled you in? What
balance.
You got?
Balance, balance, balance. Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about it already, so I'll just briefly touch on, like, I really like this choice to have the 41st Division be the reason it is Zuko's crew is because Zuko defended this crew and, like, protected and saved their life. I think that's a really cool move. I think that is something that fits with the original, which is like,
well, improves the original a little bit. Like, yeah. you're gonna look at those episodes differently,
exactly.
Because it's not just gonna be like poor Zuko. It's gonna come off as like y'all don't even know.
Yeah, like, it just feels like a really smart choice. I think that was a brilliant move. I loved it. So I thought that was something that was on my list for sure.
Yeah, that's my moment.
Yeah,
I love that moment.
Yeah.
I love that moment.
I think in the way it was done, I really liked we've talked about how flashbacks are kind of weird sometimes, not just in this show, but generally speaking, flashbacks you need to be careful with in any sort of like visual media.
Yeah.
But I liked the flashbacks in this episode. Yeah. I thought they were done well. I just thought this was a well thought out episode in terms of what is happening, which is a beautiful response to last episode.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I dislike
being pushed away by
Ko. And the way Ko is handled again.
Yeah.
This idea that like give him his totem back and he'll be nice and give you these souls that he was going to eat.
Yeah.
Like is not it's like he's a villain. I don't need some form of like
we need oh, to, but his mom.
We have to reconcile with this guy who's eating souls. No, you don't.
Yeah.
Like this idea that like you like we have to reconcile to like heal is not necessarily like the idea that you have to reconcile with the person who's causing harm is not a thing that I like, and it's not a thing that I feel like was lifted up in this episode.
Yeah.
Intentional or not, that's just what came across to me in that is like, oh, if you give him back the totem that you took, he'll give you back his friend's souls. And I'm like, that's not equivalent exchange.
Well, this isn't Full Metal Alchemist, which we are going to be covering in Bending Not Breaking moving forward.
We'll pick a Full Metal Alchemist series, Jane Austen book. But really, this idea that like we have to reconcile with Ko to get our friends back, I think is one that I just don't think fits. I don't like it.
Yeah, I hear you. No.
There's so much talk about like redemption arcs for characters, and this is not a redemption arc for Ko, but it is a little bit kind of a step in that direction.
Like villains and stuff like that. Yeah.
And I don't think some villains can just be villains.
Yep.
Yeah. And like,
no, I hear you.
They're villains. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's all right. And so I just, yeah.
Yeah.
Poe being a vengeful spirit.
And I think it's the same thing with, like, it's not done, but I think, like, it'd be the same thing as, like, oh, let me hear about Ozai's bad childhood that, like, you know, Ozai's a bad, bad, bad.
Well, and again, the context around that is, like, there are plenty of people who have bad childhoods who don't go exterminate the Air Nation.
Well, and
so
that's
like that's where you kind of lose the thread on that a little bit.
I might have said this recently on the podcast, but I saw a quote recently that says we don't like try to humanize or see the personhood in villains because we want to like condone their behavior. We want to do that because it allows us to see that we too could become a villain.
Yeah.
Right. And
it's yes. Like that's right? the change. It's
that's
not
why
it's not so that you humanize them and feel bad for them. It's so that you recognize like you're two steps away from that.
Exactly.
Right. Like,
and that's why we should work on exploring villains and why they do what they do.
Yep.
Is to realize that we too are capable of that.
Not so that you can sit there and be like, oh, poor villain.
Oh, poor
I forgive
baby.
Him now.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. But yeah. So for me, the thing that like, pushed me away was most people probably wouldn't notice this, but like the speed of travel in this was unrealistic based off of the map of the world. Right. And so Aang is flying on glider from this earthbending village to the Fire Nation island, which is like a long way away.
That June has no issue
and
getting
June
to
gets there
on by
in,
land.
Like is by like so I was like, what is the layout of this map? Because it is not the same. And so I was taken out of the episode because of that. And so it's one of those things where like, again, I don't mind that it's changed, but like because of my original context and what I think the layout is, that took me way out of the, like, this is like, whoa, how did that happen? How did June get there? How did Aang get there that fast? Sokka and Katara are in the spirit world for, like, a week, apparently. Like, and so, like, the timing is what threw me off in this episode. It felt like I was, like, constantly being like, how? So that was what pushed me away.
The decision to keep the Fire Nation soldier mask the same as the cartoon mask
with like the yeah
okay. is one that like I thought was cheesy in the cartoon,
uh-huh.
but looks downright stupid in live action.
Yeah, interesting choices.
And you just go, you're allowed to some changes you can make.
Why didn't they hire us to do this?
I don't like
the fidelity. We would have been so good.
But I mean, yeah. there's probably something to be said about
to be
why
fair,
the original creators bailed for a reason.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, but that's just a moment where I was like, so you kept the mask. Huh?
Yeah. Well, it's also like, again, we've already said that we probably wouldn't have done this. We would have done something new. So
I still don't make season two of this. Just give me a full live action.
Yeah.
Pick any avatar.
Yep.
Make one up.
Yep.
There's so many that we don't know anything about.
Well, there's this.
And just give me a 10-episode arc on that avatar.
The avatar, there's an app, a game app, that is providing a lot of, like, new characters. And they're putting out, like, new avatars that are like, hey, this is an avatar from this period and this Fire Nation. Like, so they're giving us names with like paragraph long backstories that like, oh, let's flesh that out. So if you're curious, check that out. But anyway, I digress. We've talked about the balance of what has brought us in and what has pushed us out. And so I'm going to invite us into changing gears a little bit and moving into our devotion, i.e. our intention setting segment, where we talk about an element in the avatar cycle and the lens and set an intention based off of our learnings from this conversation. So the element this time is earth, and we're going water, earth, fire, air, water, earth. So since this is episode 6, we're on earth and we're talking about pride and earth. So sunshine, what is an intention that you want to set for the coming week based off of pride and earth?
It seems probably a little simplistic, but so much of this goes to what is like the justifiable foundation for.
I was going to use the foundation.
The way that you feel, right? And the way that you show up. Zhao is trying to build, you know, a castle on straw. Like, yeah, it is like there's and so, you know, for me, it's evaluating that foundation and what's able to kind of stay there. I put a fire pit in my backyard recently, so I had to, like, really tamp the ground down to make it flat and level.
I love fire pits.
Yeah, we always do. And there's places, like, depending on the chair that I take to sit out by the fire pit, if I take some of the chairs that just has, like a very flat, like, Adirondack that's got a long base of wood, that sits just fine. If I take a chair that literally just has four, like, poles at the bottom, it will sink into – and so, like – you've got to have the correct foundation for the right
base.
In the right base. And so, like, all those things have to exist in there. And so that's kind of where my head went is, how do I evaluate to make sure that I have the correct foundation, the correct base, before I'm showing up into spaces and letting that dictate how I show up to spaces? You know, me going to an encampment right now on a college campus, that's not my expertise and stuff, so I have to show up in a way that's ready to learn and be supportive, not one who feels like they can dictate.
Yeah, this is how social justice should be.
Correct, 100%.
Yeah.
And so, like, you have to really have an awareness of how you can show up to those spaces to be supportive and helpful. Yeah. What's the goal, and what's the foundational piece that you have to show up?
And I think what's hard for me is that I think that's often a barrier for people showing up at all. Is that people, because they don't, I just don't know enough, I don't have a strong foundation, I can't show up at all, is also hard, right? But I recognize why that happens, but it's also one of those things where, like, it's better to show up and mess up to some things than it is to not show up.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it's better to not show up. Like, so don't get me, like, it's not always, that's not always a true statement to say, but, like, if you are curious about, like, showing up for social justice issues, often showing up is better than not showing up.
And you can Google how to support those things, right?
Yeah, like, there's humility is better than pride.
There's Surge Pages, S-U-R-J, they can be great resources.
Yes.
But, yeah, ensure that you have the foundation.
And highly recommend supporting the end of genocides around the world. That's so...
Absolutely.
I advocate for that. So for me, I was also thinking about foundation in terms of what was guiding this in terms of, and you know, I led for thinking about foundations in the way that you kind of framed it to thinking about just support, generally speaking, and it went away from Earth and more towards, like, that structural feeling that Earth can provide. Mm-hmm. And I remember I have a wine rack that I got a long time ago that I really love that was, we were in an apartment 10 years ago, and I put it up on the wall, and I put it up without studs. I did not put it in the studs.
No anchors.
I didn't use any sort of, and I just put it on the wall. And I was sick one day with, like, a viral infection, and I was in pain. I was literally just sitting on the couch staring at the wall. The TV wasn't even on. I was just like, ugh. And behind me, I hear a crash. And this thing falls to the ground while you're at work, and I'm alone at home dying. And I just hear glasses smash, a bottle of wine broke and emptied onto the carpet. And I was just like, I didn't even move when I heard it crash, because I just closed my eyes and started cursing, because I was like, now I have to clean up this mess while I'm in pain. And I was thinking about how, really thinking about anchoring and thinking about, like, making sure you're in a solid thing when you are, you know, doing stuff. And again, I hate to be kind of a broken record, but because this is such a big transition in my life, I just turned in a massive paper. I have one paper left before I graduate at the time of recording. And I am feeling like this is a massive change, and the structure that I have been living under in terms of routine with school is changing, and I'm about to be structureless and kind of floating in the wind. And when I think about, like, applying and finding the right job and finding this new stage in my life, I want to make sure that I'm using the proper anchors, metaphorically speaking. Like, I want to make sure that I'm aligned with the values of the organizations, that, and I think that's a strong anchor. I think I would, like, that's the kind of thing that I really want to be in the forefront of this next week moving forward, because at the time of recording, I will be in the middle of submitting a lot of applications. So, or at the time of release, I'll be submitting a bunch of applications. At the risk of being broken record, because I've talked about this several times in the past couple of weeks, but it's on my mind.
You're
so
almost
this is what's
done.
There. Yeah.
Gratitude.
I'm so grateful.
I'm going to go Iroh.
I'm grateful for Iroh.
He stood up to Ozai.
He sure did. But then that's, again, not something we got a lot of in the original, but
no.
I think is a neat color.
He stood up to Ozai, and I am in a space where I feel very grateful for those who are willing to step up to oppressive systems.
And I think part of what, again, recognizing that Iroh is uniquely qualified to do that, right, because of his relationship, he had the privilege of being able to do that in a probably safer way than other people do.
Absolutely.
And that is still giving us a model to base ourselves off of, even if we don't necessarily have the privilege that Iroh has.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm grateful, and I also just want to recognize that he's, in a way, uniquely qualified to be able to do it, which means when we have the privilege to do so, we should act accordingly and follow Iroh's lead.
Agreed.
I talked about Roku, and I talked about something that made me annoyed, but I also really appreciated Roku, and I think that one of the things he does really well is distinguish himself from Kiyoshi, who is different than Aang, and I think that that kind of mentorship was really important for Aang to hear, given the episode with Kiyoshi. And so I like that, again, there's a little bit more balance there now after having met a new avatar and had a different conversation that's entirely... I thought that was a wise decision. So I'm really grateful for Roku and his willingness to just be himself as he guides Aang. I think that's a neat thing. So I'm grateful for Roku.
There we go.
And that, I'm less grateful for, like, Roku TV. I think that's less good. I also like Roku Gen. It's pretty good. I don't know that I would recommend it as, like, a really good, amazing, like, you have to buy a Gen, but it's, like, it's good. It tastes good. So
you like Gen.
I like Gen. And
Roku
Gen's good.
Yeah.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw.
That's it.
Six episodes.
Yeah. Two episodes left. We got this. We're gonna finish it out. Who knows if we'll do seasons 2 and 3, but we are going to finish out this season.
That's just really going to be where I feel like my mental health is at that given time.
Yep.
So we'll see. But hey, two more episodes left to go in this season. We're excited. It's been good to be back. I'm Sunshine.
And I'm Ben.
And this is Bending Not Breaking. Thank you for listening.